You are listening to Particular Pilgrims, Stories from Reformed Baptist History with Commentary. I'm your host, Ron Miller, pastor of Covenant Baptist Church of Clarksville, Tennessee, and a longtime student and collector of Particular Baptist History. We are on the Man of God Network, brought to you by Covenant Baptist Theological Seminary. As we continue the story of William Stedman, you may recall that he assisted a local Anglican clergyman in teaching school for 6 years. This gave him the opportunity to improve his own education and support himself. The clergyman was a man named John Thomas, and he was an evangelical. He befriended William and supported him in his studies. When told of William's baptism upon profession of faith, Mr. Thomas didn't, quote, withdraw his affections, as William put it, but encouraged the young man to continue his pursuit of the Lord and learning. When he heard that William had begun to preach, he encouraged him again, saying, "I think you are much more capable of preaching than many who do preach." This was no doubt his recognition that many of the Anglican clergy were not converted men or fit to preach. In referring later to his young friends attending the Baptist Association, while he had to attend the local state church equivalent, he said this, "What a contrast they will exhibit. In yours, how beautiful the feet. In ours, blind leaders of the blind." This man was to remain a friend throughout his life. Also during this time, William constantly studied his Bible and read a wide range of evangelical authors. These included Calvinistic Anglicans like William Romaine and James Hervey, and many volumes of John Gill and John Brine, the high Calvinistic Baptists. This appreciation for and experience of the value of other genuine Christians, even of a different mind in some things, was always a part of Stedman's life. While a convinced Particular Baptist with strong evangelistic impulses, he appreciated and cultivated friendships across the evangelical spectrum. In this, he was representative of many Particular Baptists of the time. Initially, he could only read books written in English. He was frustrated, though, that he couldn't understand the Latin quotations in them, and so he desired to know Greek and Latin. He began to teach himself both. He also had an unremitting inclination to preach, but just never thought that would come to pass. Yet his pastor, the well-known Joshua Thomas, one day asked him if he ever thought of preaching, and he recommended that he speak at certain informal church gatherings. As he did, he was well received, and more opportunities came as he grew in his gift. These things led him to decide to pursue the work of the ministry, and so to attend Bristol Academy to further prepare for it. In August of 1788, he left home for Bristol. William could not afford to travel in any other way than to walk, and it was 60 miles. On the first day, he covered almost 30 miles, and the second, almost 20 more. At that point, he stayed with a family he knew for a few days and preached in the small Baptist church in Thornbury. He finished his journey one Tuesday afternoon and arrived at the academy just in time for the evening sermon, preached by Caleb Evans, pastor at Broadmead and head of the school, whom we studied earlier. This began William's 2 years of study, interspersed with preaching assignments. The circumstances and study methods differed considerably from what we think of as a seminary education today. There were 16 students whose costs were mostly paid by Edward Terrell's trust. The majority of the students were from Wales and didn't speak English. Now, Stedman came from very close to the Welsh border, but English was his native tongue. He saw how great were the struggles of the men trying to learn Greek, Latin, and even Hebrew, as well as do all their other studies in another foreign language, English. This led him later to strongly recommend that men learn Latin and Greek before they come to Bristol. There were three tutors, Caleb Evans, Robert Hall, and James Newton. And there was an emphasis on preaching, both to each other before their tutors, in churches, and in an itinerant ministry in villages. That was one of Caleb Evans's real interests. There were two other students that he became especially close to, Samuel Pierce and Josiah Evans. This leads to another difference with much of modern seminary life. It is this: these three would meet in their rooms two or three times each day for spiritual conversation, Bible study, and prayer. They provoked each other in their love to the Lord and what Thomas Stedman later called, quote, their aspirations for the universal diffusion of gospel light and love. Surely this displayed zeal later in life turned into holiness, preaching, and missionary work, and it was all cultivated by these practices. But we must not romanticize Stedman's experiences there. He himself says, quote, when I look back on the period spent there, I see much for which to this day I have great cause to humble myself. Attention to the languages and other branches of study had a tendency to blunt my religious feelings, and a proneness to levity did me still greater in injury. But still, I was enabled, through divine grace, to keep up some sense of God and divine things in my mind. Stedman especially liked to go out to preach for local churches. The reason was that, as he put it, quote, it threw me in the way of many lively Christians whose conversation was very beneficial, and the exercises themselves awakened my energies and brought my religious feelings into action. He preached at some places we have already studied, such as Horsley and Broughton. He summed up his 2 years of study by saying that he thought its chief benefit was that it increased his acquaintance with men and things. Coming from the small, remote, and sheltered life in which he was raised, and considering how widely he would later travel and minister, this conclusion rings true. After graduation, he received a call to the Baptist Church in Broughton. You might recall that this was the home of the Steele family, William and his daughter Anne Steele, the hymnist, being the best known. But William had died 30 years before, and Anne more than a decade previous to Stedman's arrival in 1789. The congregation was small, about 40 members, and largely uneducated. Under the previous pastor, through no fault of his own, both hyper-Calvinism and Sandemanianism had troubled the church. They had become, in Stedman's words, quote, a contentious people. But their need tugged on him, and he accepted the call. Stedman was ordained in 1791, but his 8-year pastorate was a discouraging one overall. Poverty harmed his health and made the work challenging. He began a Sunday school, but it wasn't supported by his people. The Lord's Day labors usually consisted in 3 meetings with a sermon at each, and sometimes the worship, especially in the afternoons, was held in an outlying area and necessitated travel. He struggled with depression, but in 1793 did find a good thing in a wife named Sarah Webb. And reading strengthened him. He worked his way through Romans in the Greek, utilizing Beza's notes on it, he said, which of course would have been in Latin. Beza was apparently a favorite of his, for he says, I am never tired of reading Beza. He also profited from John Owen's The Glory of Christ and Jonathan Edwards's Life of David Brainerd. The latter's missionary example led Stedman to regularly go into the surrounding unchurched villages and preach. This was to continue for the rest of his life, even in what Sharon James described as opposition, apathy, appalling weather, fear, or sheer fatigue. There was little apparent fruit to this hard labor, though he was able to get a small work established in nearby Stockbridge. Reflecting on this time later in life, he realized much good came from it. The best thing, perhaps, was that he set an example in evangelistic preaching that the other ministers in the area learned to imitate, so that by the time he left Broughton, quote, all the younger ministers, both Baptists and independent, and a number of members in their churches as occasional preachers, started out in every direction. The other benefit was the experience Stedman gained for himself, which fit him well for the work God had for him in the future. In the summers of 1796 and 7, Stedman and others went on preaching tours in Cornwall. The work and the results strongly encouraged him. His interest in that area was kept up throughout his life by way of return visits and the raising of money for the poor churches. Finally, after 8 years of ministry, in June of 1798, Stedman agreed to go to Plymouth and help our friend Isaiah Burt. The church at Plymouth Dock, or Devonport, had so grown that it was again meeting in two places and needed another man. And so we get back around to the story of the particular Baptist churches in Plymouth. We'll continue with Stedman's ministry there next time. Thank you for listening today. This is Ron the Baptist, wishing you grace and peace. Thank you.